Welcome to the weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week, did you worry there?
Yeah, I did.
And this week on the weekly, Beyond the Gates of Antares discontinued.
Oh.
But also getting a second edition.
So okay.
Figure okay. that one out.
What?
Hasbro buys D&D Beyond, mm-hmm. Fearsome Wilderness, mm-hmm. Tainted Grail sequel, and Happy Birthday from Warhammer 40K.
Oh. Interesting. Okay. So my inclusion of the miniatures war game hashtag in the announcement is becoming more and more apt.
Right, right. Oh, and there's also a little note about Paizo. Yeah,
we're
talking about Hasbro.
Yeah, Paizo, yeah. Second fiddle. Well, who isn't second fiddle to
Yeah, everything's becoming distant second fiddle. Yeah. All right. So we got a notice about the future of Beyond the Gates of Antares. So Beyond the Gates of Antares is a Rick Priestley designed he came up with a setting, I think,
okay.
and they're using the bolt action rule set.
Oh, interesting.
So it plays pretty nice. That rule set works well because it is just the weapons are different, but the still the function of armies and being pinned and everything works very well.
Oh, cool.
So their announcement starts, as you know, there have been considerable recent worldwide pressures that impact on how businesses are managed. So Warlord is admitting inevitably we had to make some hard decisions about our game. So the first one to kind of the first fatality in this set was Cruel Seas, their little naval okay. battles game.
This is Warlord Games.
Yeah, Warlord Games. Right. So Warlord Games is saying they've had to make some changes, and Cruel Seas has gone over to their sister company, Skytrex. So
okay.
Skytrex does mostly military miniatures okay. and things now. And I think they're just continuing what Warlord already has. Maybe they inherit the molds or whatever,
okay.
and so they keep producing things. So we have made the difficult decision to halt the development of Beyond the Gates of Antares, the system, as it requires much more resources to do it justice than our traditional historical games, and we don't wish to do it half-heartedly. So that sadly means that Tim Bancroft, kind of the project head, will also be leaving Warlord Games, but they will continue to work on this system. So in the next few months, Warlord Games, all of the existing models that are still in production are going to move over to Skytrex, but it's not being abandoned. So both Tim and Rick Priestley are going to do future support and work on the development of the game and the universe in a free second edition. And it's
okay.
going to be available on the AtarisNexus.com website, and it's going to be all through PDFs. So
okay.
there probably won't be anything published in the future. They want to continue, maybe refine the setting and kind of continue the storyline. I'm sure they had like a whole thing planned for where the game was going to go. So refine the game a bit and continue the story for free. So your models won't be completely
right.
useless, but they won't be evolving. There were a couple of like evolutions of the factions that happened
okay.
during the first edition, and that's not going to be happening. So that's.
But you said that Skytrex is going to get the miniatures.
Yes, of what's existing. Yeah. So previously, and things maybe that are, I'm not sure, things that were in the original starter set. So you probably have to have an army, and then you can still add support
right.
units
okay.
and things. So. If the and I'm sure there's still boxes of the starter sets floating around in different retail, but I don't know if they're going to be offering that anymore. It's
right,
probably
going okay.
to be individual, blister packs. Well,
that was my thing, because
yeah.
I have only looked a little bit at Warlord Games because mm-hmm. they produce some Napoleonic stuff that I
right,
could possibly
right.
use for a turnip or a sludge. Haven't bought anything from them. It kind of sounded like with their Cruel Seas, Skytrex is taking over like full production of that Cruel Seas thing, including like you said, possibly any like. Molds and models, and if they wanted to, they could continue to produce stuff.
Yeah,
I
so
I was wondering if the same thing was happening with Gates of Antares.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound like the case. It sounds like Skytrex is getting any remaining Gates of Antares model stock and will continue to produce free second edition rules
right,
PDFs,
right.
but it doesn't sound like Skytrex will produce Gates of Antares models.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Yeah, yeah, they weren't very specific, and mm-hmm. I'm not even sure about.
The Cruel Seas.
The
one?
Cruel Seas,
right.
yeah. No, because I just know that. So things will continue. So they're going to be removed from the Warlord Games web store, but they're going to exist on Skytrex.
Right.
And so I'm not sure what
that means
as far
right,
as yeah,
right.
inventory. But if the demand is still there, maybe they'll they'll look into it because it's metal miniatures. Well,
Oof.
Metal, but metal's been going up though. The metal's been getting more expensive. The white metal has been pricey, so that's why Infinity has been switching over
right.
to.
Well, I don't think plastic is going. Down in price at all, because as someone who's bought more Perry miniatures, like there was a recent email from the Perry miniatures guys saying, we've put it off for as long as we can. Unfortunately, the price of our plastic box kits is going to have to go up like £2 each just because of stuff that's going on. I've not looked at their metal range. I know they have an extensive metal range, but I can't make comparisons based on that. So
The thing that Corvus Belli and both the people that are doing the Chronopia reboot and Warzone, they're going to Seocast, so the thermoplastic resin, and so that means those machines are, you know, the molds are produced much more easily, more like white metal. They're just like silicone discs, and they're going to be producing smaller machines locally. So wherever that game is being developed, that's the country that the models are going to be being made. So hopefully that'll help with the cost of production, because the molds are made very quickly. It's not like 10 to 15 weeks to tool those, you know, metal.
I wonder how miniature molds are done now, because it kind of blew my mind in like the 90s when they figured out, okay, you have to scale things like 3-up size to tool like the metal miniature molds for plastic, and then they could kind of like scale down again. I wonder if the CO cast is just, a one-to-one.
I'm not sure. There are some technical, like the COcast website has a whole thing, like technically, and a few people have done kind of comparison YouTube videos and things.
Oh, cool.
For what you get, mostly from, because Infinity, I think, was the first one to kind of jump into it with some of their larger models to avoid resin and then white metal. But so we'll see what that means for, you know, it just seems like they don't have to invest. There's not so much initial investment, and they can kind of produce to keep up. So I hope that means that these games that are starting out kind of skirmish level and trying to grow, that they'll be able to do that without too much pain or too much like sudden, like, we're going to end this. Because it could be basically print to order almost, you know, at a certain point.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, it's too bad. I really like that setting. I like that game. And I'm glad it's not dead. I'm glad it's still continuing. And I definitely want to...
it's also nice that they didn't just say, all those models, unusable.
Yeah, right.
Just, like some other big name company often does.
Yeah, right. just gone. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, and the original creators involved, you know, that makes a big difference that still they're getting support. And it's not fan support. And it's definitely...
although, as someone who just played the game of Nisei. Sometimes fan support isn't bad.
Yes.
Like, sometimes the original designer, not always, and I don't have specifics, sometimes the original designer, like, loses the plot, right?
No, that's true.
Yeah, pulls a George Lucas.
Yeah, right. You know, things do go kind of off the rails. Or like, you know, just the grind of production. I think Netrunner was kind of getting to that point where
I kind of threw a wrench in there. Tangent, but yeah, they started ramping up production. It's kind of like what seemed like a small set every 6 months was like every 3 months.
Yeah,
like, come on, some of these cards are just the banned, and like we never ran into it because we had such a casual meta, but like the ban list is getting ridiculous. Where like what percent of the cards that just got released just are now on this banned list because you didn't play stuff enough? Anyway,
we had a week of playtesting. So we'll see. Take a look at AntarisNexus.com to see the future of Beyond the Gates of Antares.
Pun intended?
Yes.
Another game added to the list of games we have to play?
Yes, into the future. All right, the next big news, and this was pretty gigantic news, always with Hasbro's involved, it's going to be big. So Hasbro has acquired D&D Beyond from Fandom for a hefty, almost $146.3 million in cash.
Oh, million.
Yeah, million. Hopefully it's all like $1 bills, you know, in tractor trailers. And that is going to give them access to the 10 million players that are already registered on the D&D Beyond platform. So, yes, the fastest growing world's best RPG keeps growing fast, and now it's digitally. So now we know that the president of Wizards and the president of Hasbro are both former Microsoft executives, and over these last few years, the pandemic years, they've been saying the growth, you know, in digital platform is exponential. We have to jump on this. So this is their attempt to jump on it as heavily as possible.
Well, I saw this news last night, the night before, and... okay, D&D, whatever. You can't escape it. But my immediate thought went to what's going to happen to fandom and the Tales of Azadia, the Dragon Prince, and Cortex Prime, because that's fandom. Right. So first I was looking at, like, is this going to affect it at all? And as far as I can tell, no. This is like, WotC only bought D&D Beyond, right?
Yes, yes.
And armchair quarterbacking, I forget where I read it. Like, some people were saying D&D or WotC could have easily, probably easily, just bought the entirety of fandom themselves, including Dragon Prince and Cortex Prime, and then just not done anything with them. Which I think they rightly said, this person rightly said, that would have seemed too predatory. Right, here's this other kind of fantasy-based TTRPG that is a competitor, because nothing can compete with the giant, and then they just kind of mothball it, right? So no, they didn't do that. As far as, I think we don't know how much of the talent is going with
everything.
D&D.
So it's
all of it.
It's just, they're just kind of moving, and I think it kind of, like they've done in the past, when they acquire something, it's just like, okay, business as usual, you just report to Hasbro now.
Someone different signs your checks.
Right. That's the, so they want to keep, because it's been successfully run for, I think, about 8 years. Eighth consecutive year of growth. And they want to keep that going.
I'm sure they do.
And the relationship has been going for quite a while. And they realized over the past 3 years, the royalties paid to Hasbro by D&D Beyond represented a significant contribution to Hasbro.
Wow.
So, and I think that's what fandom is. So there wouldn't be any point in buying fandom. It's kind of like buying Wikipedia, because everything that's on there is an IP that's licensed, you know, so it's all, it's just like an empty shell full of, you know, licensed content. So that's a very interesting situation. So now they have all of those tools and everything's developed, and it already looks so D&D, like it already looks so Wizards in the way they design the website and everything.
I can't not hear what's his face from Episode One. That's so Wizard. I'm sorry.
But the interesting, somebody made a comment that if you deal with recent players and their introduction was D&D digital only, they literally cannot make a character without clicking the buttons on D&D Beyond. Like, there is, and they make it easy and it's, you know, attractively illustrated and everything. But that they really, like, would have no idea. It's like,
sounds a lot like, back in my day, we read books and we liked it. And now you have your newfangled calculators. Okay, you know what? I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are probably people who you would toss them a book and they go, could you help me out? I've only made a character online. I'm kind of used to them.
Right.
But that's a bit, I mean, like.
No, I mean, but
I'm sure that happens.
No, but the way
let's
that,
not get all crotchety about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, but the way that it's structured, though, it's like you wouldn't even know where to look in a book for you know, how that works and what it cranks out, like what it kind of produces, because it's doing enough of the kind of calculation and work in the background. So you click this and you pick from one of these three and then you do this.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, where would that be? Because, you know, you're also looking through multiple volumes. Yep. That's the other thing that D&D does so well.
The biggest comment that I seemed to see on this announcement was along the lines of, great, increase the subscription by $5 and give us, like, fucking digital code in the physical books now.
Right.
Well, so we don't have to buy each $40 book three times.
So that's going to be the thing that's going to be ugly about this, is now that it's in-house, if they are going to ask you to buy it twice, because if they don't, then think of all the revenue that they're going to lose. Like, if they don't continue to, you have to buy the digital version separately, how much money are you going to lose? And so the only way to make that make sense is to now get a hold of a virtual tabletop. So like Roll20 or something might be in their sites. But their comment was, the acquisition of D&D Beyond will accelerate our progress in both gaming and direct-to-consumer, two priority area growths for Hasbro, providing immediate access to a loyal and growing player base.
Sorry, what were their two priorities?
Gaming and direct-to-customer.
Oh, gaming. Not a quality product. Or a game that actually does what it says on the tin. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so, and this is, and so also Fandom was happy about this too. D&D Beyond, the kind of head of D&D Beyond and the CEO of Fandom were happy about this whole result, because I guess Fandom is claiming they have over 300 million global accounts. I don't know what that necessarily means. It can't be paid accounts, but they have access to marketing to those people.
I mean, like, when you talk about these like corporate accounts going, yeah, we're happy about this, what else are you allowed to say?
Yeah, yeah. And the big thing that this is going to give Hasbro is the data. Mm-hmm. So the thing that they didn't have before is, what's the most popular character class? How many players use a dagger? You know, like all this like stuff that we're going to start seeing. But the problem with that is, if they make the mistake and use that data poorly, like all marketing departments do, then everything's going to be skewed. Everyone, you'll have just like flavors of tiefling is the only thing you're going to be playing, and everyone's going to be using a glaive. And
well,
because that's the popular thing to do.
Exactly. I was going to say, even if you don't like it, which I don't, can you really complain about a company catering to its fan base, right? If they go like, this is what people are playing, this is what people want, this is what it makes sense for us to produce more of this content.
Right, right.
There you go.
But they're going to have to choose like a portion of that demographic to, you know, to kind of pander to, because it's going to, well, look, we're already talking about D&D is kind of split between people that just want to play it like a computer RPG game on a virtual tabletop, and then people that want to, you know, do theater.
I would be curious to know if people who use D&D Beyond largely tend to skew to one of those two groups, or if it's fairly evenly split. Because, like, my own personal bias, if you're going to do kind of theater of the mind, we're going to role play our farmers in love that just happen to be playing D&D, in which case, why the fuck are you playing D&D, right? Mm-hmm. Do those people, do those type of players use D&D Beyond in a large percentage? Is it skewed more towards the, yes, we're going to like count squares and do all the math, and it's going to be mostly combat and, you know, kind of that style of player?
Right, right.
My initial reaction would be the game players would use D&D Beyond more than the theater of the mind players. So in which case, I kind of agree, like, okay, if that's what you want, we're catering to you, right?
Right. Yeah, and that's why they need a virtual tabletop too. Then they can put it, you know, put you right there. Yeah, and so
virtual tabletop, not a virtual theater.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And they're also claiming that 80% of D&D players have played virtually. So that's that's pretty significant. And I guess like 80% of the world had to play.
Well, I mean, virtually. They said played, not 80% of our fan base plays. Enjoy, right? They didn't say enjoy. And they also say didn't say plays. That like one time.
Right, right.
And you're, you're on that,
Yeah, so, I wonder. I wonder what that's going to, I mean, but with the leadership they have now, they're going all in digital, and they want to package this thing up. And the thing that is going to, you know, create an ecosystem. You're kind of like Apple, you know. You've got an iPhone, you know, you got your .Mac email address and your Mac.com email address, and you are stuck in this thing, and you want to do anything else, you're really screwed. You have to, you know, kind of double invest. So that's what they may be trying to do, is get you stuck in something where it's like, oh yeah, no, this platform doesn't play anything else but D&D. Oh, you want to, but D&D will do all of these wonderful things.
Of course, because with D&D you can, Jeremy, we've been doing this for how long?
Right.
D&D can play any type of game that you want. It's a toolbox system. Why would you need anything other than D&D Beyond and whatever virtual tabletop WotC acquires?
Yes.
That's all you need.
That's all.
Why would anyone need to go anywhere?
There is no point. There are surrender.
There are no problems.
Yes. Just assimilate to, to 5e. Yes. So So kind of connected to this peripherally, but something that we missed a few weeks ago that really made me sad, like there's been enough of this with smaller systems and kind of more old school or obscure systems where they're releasing, okay, well, we're going to port this to 5e.
Yep.
Paizo announced that they are making their first, the first adventure path of theirs that was originally for Pathfinder now available for 5e.
When was that put out?
A couple weeks ago.
No, sorry, the original one, yeah.
Oh, so it's Abomination Vaults. So I'm not sure what when the initial release was, but I think it's, you know, probably something more recent. It's not like their old classic.
Oh, really? Okay, because that's what I was wondering, right? Because okay.
So yeah, it's the mysterious gauntlet, an eerie landlocked lighthouse. So I'm not sure this setting. They go a little bit into the setting that you're going to be playing, but you can pre-order it in October. So it's not, they just announced it. It's not going to be out for a while, but yeah, that means, yeah. And they're already talking, I mean, we looked at the stats, at least the Roll20 stats, and more than 50% is 5e
of the sessions. I mean, kind of the joke is, what, you play two RPGs, Pathfinder and D&D?
But as we've seen, like year on year, the domination of 5e and kind of the shrinking.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Paizo or the Pathfinder. And I think once they did the second edition of Pathfinder, it just kind of shrunk things even more because then that split their already small fan base into two. It's like, well, I want to still play the 3.5 style, and now you've got this new. Right. So it split it even further. So now they're
well, I mean, I hadn't realized that the stuff was shrinking. I, again, can't blame them for saying, we need more income. So, you know, from my perspective, you might as well be playing the same game, right? They seem fairly similar, like maybe even more similar than OSR games, right? You kind of have like this OSR group where everything kind of already works together with little tweaks. That was Pathfinder and D&D for me. I'm sure people are going to complain about that. So why not?
Yeah,
if it's right. We've got this stuff. It will be take minimal tweaking to make it 5e compatible. We'll get more people on board.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, so hopefully, I mean, hopefully this means a bigger audience for Paizo's, you know, Adventure Path releases, but it also could mean just kind of the diminishing, you know,
maybe.
It could mean just the end. But it would be good if it put some competition or some stress on the new settings and things that Wizards is developing, because the recent releases have been a little wacky.
the original stuff.
Yeah, Wizards. Okay. The 5e stuff has been a little wacky. So it'd be nice if what they're doing for Pathfinder kind of offers a nicer, you know, choice of adventures.
You know what Paizo ought to do? This is only based on my small circle. People seem to be warming up once again to 4th edition. Put out 4th edition. Right?
Right. The thing, nobody would expect Paizo to embrace 4th edition.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, so we'll see. Yeah, so I just wanted to mention that as a little depressing side note to this, you know, Hasbro swallowing stuff up is, even Paizo has given up. Like, they existed because of a misstep by Wizards, and now they are maybe ceasing to exist eventually.
Yeah, maybe.
Just be absorbed. And if they, maybe they're just going to be doing Adventure Paths from now on.
I don't know if you could make a business out of it. You probably could. But I mean, like, people do third-party adventure paths or scenarios and stuff. There is a large market for it, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Anyway. And if people, you know, the reputation holds and people are like, oh, well, I know what to expect, you know, Paizo. Yeah. But let's look at something not 5e.
Ooh,
so God. Fearsome Wilderness is now available. There's a free trial version on DriveThruRPG.
Cool.
And Fearsome Wilderness sounds like a really fun setting, and it's Year Zero engine. So a nice... system.
D20 mechanic.
Yes, to be used. So the setting is, you're marooned on an overgrown planet choked with forest and wildlife. You're forced to hack out your existence by the sharpness of your axe. So the this kind of free trial version is a prologue to how you got to this planet. And basically, your characters are prisoners aboard a transport ship, and you've recently awoken from hibernation. And the ship is now crashing onto a densely wooded planet. And the interesting kind of the twist to it, besides like wilderness survival, is the densely wooded planet is inhabited by unnatural, fearsome critters of American lumberjack folklore.
Okay, now you got my attention, because I kind of went, oh no, this is the Will Smith movie.
Oh no,
whatever, After Earth or whatever. Yeah, oh right. Yeah.
Yeah, where you're controlling your fear emotions.
This whole planet is designed to hunt people. Why? Because people have been here. They haven't been here. How is that? Anyway. Nice. So the lumberjack thing is now
So folklore, yeah. And so the
horror... Oh, no, there's going to be a giant Paul Bunyan.
Right. The horror is compounded by the fact that waking up from such an extended period of hibernation can do strange things to the mind.
Did I see a giant blue oxen? No, man, that's just the cryo sleep. That's just the cryo sleep.
Nice. So this free trial is, of course, Year Zero based, Year Zero engine. Easy character creation with six of the 16 archetypes available for free. Six pre-made characters if you just want to jump right into it. A GM section, a wilderness hex map, a prologue that introduces you to the setting, three wilderness locations, 11 of the 15 fearsome critters, and 13 of the 36 interactions for players to experience along with the full rules associated with all eight nightmare levels in the game.
I wonder where the focus is on this game.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds like wilderness survival, and I don't think I've really seen a decent survival mechanics kind of thing, right? Like, are we going to like largely just abstract, like, okay, yeah, it takes you 5 days to build a shelter and let's move on to like fighting the kind of lumberjack monster dudes? Or is it going to be like, nope, let's kind of get into the nitty gritty of hopefully somewhat abstract managing resources to, you know, survive
this thing, right?
Oh, you died of dysentery.
Yeah.
not the giant blue ox.
Yeah, they may have chosen the Year Zero engine because that the hex crawling of like Forbidden Lands.
Yep, that's what I thought of.
Might fit this really well, and they may actually be able to make it, you know, a little bit more bigger consequences, like you know, when you're starving or you know, starting to die of thirst or whatever. There's actual like mental things that are happening to you, so that's where you start, you know, having trouble discerning what's real and what is a.
The one thing I'm thinking of now is that Red Markets game. Like the zombie apocalypse game, where it seemed really interesting, where everything had a charge, right? Like even just basic swinging an axe had a charge that represented like your energy expenditure, right? And that seemed cool because you had to like manage all this stuff, and that seemed to put the focus more on like survival. Like, do I want to do this because we only have so many rations left and all that stuff? Like in reading it, it seemed way too crunchy for my taste, but I would kind of like to see something like that if they're going to focus on the survival aspect. The wilderness hex map makes me think a bit more of exploration.
We could
always go back to the ship, right? Kind of a lost in space kind of thing. Like the ship, the crash ship, while dangerous, is going to be our home base. Let's kind of explore out from there and we'll go back, and hopefully the ship has like some kind of operational med bay or whatever. But yeah. It still sounds interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting twist. And if they really lean into the survival mechanics, because basically they're saying, you know, you woke up from hibernation, you start with nothing, no gear, so everything has to be
clothes,
salvaged.
At least.
Yeah.
Or is this like the tabletop version of whatever that game is, Rust,
yeah,
right?
Right. You just bash each other's heads with rocks.
Or ours is some, oh my God, I don't want to play with these people, but I imagine someone just like running around opening all the cryopods, like stealing boots and clothes and stuff. Right. Be like, ha-ha, you all start with nothing. I've got all your clothes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if it's influenced by a lot of the survival games, like, you know, Rust and multiplayer online games that have come before, there may be some interesting kind of twists in how they deal with survival, because there's been a lot in gaming that's happened so far.
I think for video games, I think that's one of the upsides, where that can all be tracked by the computer behind the screen. I think that's one of the considerations for survival tabletop games, is that a person has to manage all these resources. And I mean, like, again, I'm thinking of that, early Twilight 2000s system that powered the Cadillacs and dinosaurs. Why are we tracking individual fucking bullets, right? There's a T-Rex chasing our car that's powered by dinosaur shit. So why do we have a counting bullets, right? But too abstract, and I think it feels unsatisfactory. Right? This is supposed to be a survival game,
right?
Why do we just have a single pool of resources to do everything? That might not feel
yeah. Well, and that was the thing. Like I think, enough. I think that was Chris's criticism of the resource management in Forbidden Lands is a bad role, and it's just like, what happened to all the food? You know, like seriously, you can
it's spoiled. Sorry.
Yeah, you're suddenly just out of ammunition, or you're suddenly just out of food, just because of a bad role. And how does that work? Mm. And you were being very careful, and then you had this, you know, you ruled all ones or whatever. Right. Like, I can't believe this. Now we're out of food, so you have to. Yeah, it has to kind of make sense and not just be this random swing.
Right.
Yeah. So take a look at that. I'll put a link to that free trial so you can see if that kind of weird crashed on an alien planet with lumberjack folklore is an interesting enough combination for you.
I'm going to have to go look at that. I guess only because it's related. I explained to my kid and partner that each state in the U.S. kind of has like a monster, and someone did a really great illustration of the most popular kind of folklore monster. Uh-huh. And I'm like, yeah, Pennsylvania's is the fucking Squanch, this little ugly pig thing that can like cry itself until it melts, right? Show that to my kid. That was a mistake. But anyway, I thought it would be a great idea to one day do like a Monster of the Week campaign that's a giant fucking road trip you just travel to each of the 50 states and you know what monster you're going to kind of deal with. But I thought that would be pretty cool. And some of those state monsters are just ridiculous. Anyway.
Nice. Yeah. Very fun. Oh, and something. So this is interesting because the timing, of course, is kind of obvious. So Tainted Grail, one of the biggest Kickstarters, one of the biggest successful board game Kickstarters, is doing a sequel. Or it's a sequel. It's a second edition and a sequel of the story.
Okay.
So Kings of Ruin is the sequel, which is continuing the story, but the original game is also getting like a second edition, like rules refinement. And this is all being released. So this is Awakened Realms. And as we know, Awakened Realms just launched their competitor to Kickstarter, GameFound. Mm. So they're taking their biggest success on Kickstarter, and now they're only going to be putting it on GameFound. So this will kind of prove whether or not they can produce the same sort of numbers and get the same sort of response.
Well, I mean, it seems to be a decent strategy. Like if it was one of the biggest board game Kickstarters, like you said, here's a second edition in case you missed the first one. And here's like a part two.
Yeah, so it's good.
Yeah.
And also because they used GameFound for fulfillment, kind of as their pledge manager, everyone that bought the first game is already registered.
Oh, right.
You already basically have an account. So I think that was a really good way to kind of transition things. So yeah, the biggest game of 2018, $6.4 million on Kickstarter. So we'll see. And then one of the top 10 biggest of all time. Hmm. But that list keeps getting knocked out of that list. The top keeps growing.
Or you just keep narrowing the parameters. Board games without a board.
Yeah. So this is a crowdfunding platform for only tabletop. Yeah. So that's a very kind of interesting, kind of narrowing of projects and everything. And it may, depending on how the split and how they mechanically handle it, it may end up pulling some projects away from Kickstarter because that's their biggest category right now. So we will see. So they're claiming that the new edition will be one of the most mechanically polished and most exciting stories in board games.
That's a bold claim.
Yes, with key mechanics, with key improvements made to the original mechanics, changing the travel systems and rebalancing character advancements. So expect more details soon about this release. But yeah, it's a really, the production quality and everything, the miniatures are great for Awakened Realms. So this will be big proof of that platform. And if they can do the same kind of numbers they did on Kickstarter, then we have got a legitimate competitor then.
Right.
So that's
probably
good.
Not using blockchain.
Yeah, right. That will not be using, doesn't want to hire anyone to say, so what do you think about blockchain? Yeah. Are the NFTs our future? So keep an eye out for that on GameFound. And last and definitely least, Games Workshop has partnered with a website called Moonpig.
Okay.
So this is pretty much the cringe level of scented candles, Warhammer themed scented candles. So now you can customize Warhammer 40K themed birthday cards for your 40K loving friends. And your first card can be 40% off if you use this promotional link. Yeah. And so it's like putting photos in like circles or like Space Marines. There's a lot of like weird, like you can customize with the name, or you can put like, you know, those weird vacation things where it's like Disney World and then there's a circle with your family's picture in it. It's a lot like that. So just, you know, Moon Pig kind of like, you know.
You know, I think I'd prefer the scented candles.
Yeah.
I kind of want to know what Nuln oil smells like and like, right, okay, right. You got like, what, like not, like Promethean refinery and all this kind of stuff. And just like,
Yeah, that would be a little bit, yeah.
Ooh, unmarked guardsman barracks. I don't want to smell that candle.
Yeah, so once again, we see the Warhammer license is out there for, it's available for a price. So just kind of a cheesy use of this license. It was really, and the way they have to promote, like it's in there with all the rest of the ridiculous stuff that they're promoting for the game, and then you're like, and birthday cards.
Well, I mean, like, come on, are birthday cards really that far off of like Chibi Marines?
Yeah, that's true. They have done some silly stuff recently. Yeah, so people just keep getting that license, but it's nothing compared to the Ultramarine bathrobe. I still think those pauldrons on a bathrobe are pretty.
Let me know when they put a backpack on it.
Yeah, right. That's right. Oh, man. So that is all for this week. Yeah, quite nice. A bit of stuff packed in there. And there's stuff that didn't fit. So next week, we're definitely going to be talking about the Embracer Group has made their first move. Yeah. Or we're seeing evidence of their synergies are available. And some more Gygax complications.
Get that GIF ready.
Yes. All right, so where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. It's Hivemind, HYVEMYND, where I'm currently talking about, I don't remember, probably turnip stuff or sludge stuff. Although it's hard to build anything when you don't have your heads.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. Still waiting on those, so yeah.
Heads will be sent to you.
Heads will roll! Yes. Especially when my kid tips them over the tray that they all keep them in. Yeah, anyway. How about you?
So I'm doing a single panel gag cartoon as a live stream. So that's Monday nights, North American time. So Abuse Cartoons on Twitch and YouTube, and then Abuse Cartoons on social media. And if you want to see the archive of that single panel gag cartoon, go to gocomics.com/domesticabuse.
And you have 20 years to go through.
20 whole years to go through. Yes, yes. And if you'd like to support what we're doing here on the weekly, please consider visiting patreon.com/upturntable and become a weakling.
Yes.
So you can let us know what you want to see, what you don't want to see ever again, and just give us some input about what we can do weekly here on the show. And there's other levels, other tiers of support to support the lore series and other things that we're doing. And please visit upturntable.com for just kind of the home base for everything that we do, and including videos and podcasts and all that good stuff. So this appears both as on YouTube as a live stream and then as a podcast on your preferred podcast platform. So that will do it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.